Okay, back. Rule 62. If you want to have the experience, you got to let go and see what comes. That sounds nice, but how do you do that? How do you let go?
Welcome to Consciously, a podcast focused on honest conversations for regular people seeking spiritual growth. Here's our host, Menachem Poznanski.
Hey, Consciously family, welcome back. Okay, here we go. Back into Rule 62, getting ready for Purim and trying to tap in to this light. So last time we talked about how Rule 62, the idea of a 60-second rule, now instead of starting the rules all over again, remind us to embrace and enjoy the process and celebrate the humor, the great line that is all of reality. I want to say joke because that makes it seem like it's a joke, but or in a negative pejorative form. Anyway, but we talked about that last time. Check that out. But today we're going to talk about how Rule 62 teaches us to lean into the experience, to let go and let the experience happen. That's kind of the title of this chapter, of this section of this series of three. But before we get there, I want to thank you for joining the podcast. Give us 5 stars and a review if you'd like. Share us with your friends, more importantly. Really appreciate you listening. Check us out on thelightrevealed.org. And you can check us out on social media, Light Revealed, at The Light Revealed, at Menachem Puz on Instagram and on Facebook. You can also check out our WhatsApp update group, and also probably the best is the newsletter, the weekly newsletter that just gives you access to all the different things that came out that week, including a weekly write-up by Rib Joey, amongst other things. Okay, so let's jump in. So last time we talked about some of the background of Rule 62 and the principle that it, one of the principles that it reflects for those of you. Just as a reminder, for those of you not familiar, Rule 62 was kind of a funny, tongue-in-cheek thing that one of the early AA groups did when they had crafted together a list of 61 rules to try to accomplish something that the elders at the time were telling them wasn't a good idea, and that it just wasn't such a smart move. And they said, well, no, we have our 61 rules, and that's going to basically protect us from ourselves. And ultimately, the whole thing blew up, and then they sent in a postcard that said, just Rule 62, don't take yourself too seriously. And that's kind of become, a mantra in the recovery world, particularly in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we were talking about some of the life lessons that you can draw from that story. Like all spiritual type stories, Lahavdil, when we hear stories of tzaddikim, the reason why stories are passed down is because they exemplify principles in a way that saying the principle wouldn't fully capture it. So what we wanted to look at was what are some of those principles that pull them out, and really correlating that to some of the experience of the Jewish people in and around Purim, because a lot of the intention of Rule 62 is the way in which we don't take ourselves too seriously, and therefore also we can have fun and laugh and be silly. We can take off our masks by putting masks on, and that a lot of those themes definitely relate to Purim coming up, so it seemed like a good idea. Also, as I mentioned last time, we recently had a TLR retreat, living room retreat, and I do a series of workshops on the retreat, and all the workshops were on these topics. So taking those workshops and putting them here for posterity, and for those of you who are there, hopefully somewhat of a review, but it's definitely not exactly the same because you can never replicate good vibes, especially by myself in my office with a microphone. Okay, but we do the best we can. Okay, so what I want to talk about today, Rule 62, let go and let the experience happen. And the lesson that I really want to focus in on in terms of what we can draw from this story of Rule 62 is that when we make hard rules that are driven by our expectations and projections of what should happen, it doesn't let the experience happen. It takes, it strips us of our experience. And I want to talk about how that correlates to our capacity to have faith and really to enjoy life. So let's break down first the words that I used, expectation and projection, because I'm those are words, and words are interesting because they exemplify principles and ideas, but they can exemplify different principles and ideas. So I'll just define what I mean by expectations and projections, because I mean them in a particular way. So expectations are really when a situation comes about or I engage a process and I decide what should happen. I expect this to occur. And my projections are ways in which I project how I should feel about it, right? I project out that this should occur because I want to feel good about it, or I want to feel successful, or I want to feel better, stronger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when I'm talking about projection, and then in psychological frames, or in like psychotherapeutic frames, projections are specifically related to emotions, and that's part of why I'm keying into that. But I think there's a reason for that, because projections really relate to my emotions about a process, whereas expectations really correlate to my ideas. And this correlates to something we talked about a few episodes ago on trauma, about fundamentally our makeup being broken down into two kind of core streams, one being thoughts, ideas, and the other being emotions or experiences, how I experience things. And when we make expectations or projections on a process, what we're really doing, Panemia Satora reveals to us, is engaging in a subtle form of idolatry. And sadly, we're doing what's called shoulding on our lives, right? We engage a form of idolatry. Let's break that down a little bit. We engage a form of idolatry because we think that we are the masters of our own experience, right? When we say, well, this is what should be, or this is what I should experience, when we engage expectations and projections, we are setting ourselves up as a deity, as the deciding factor. And it's not actual idol worship, but in a lot of ways, it's similar to idol worship, because we're saying we know better than God what should be, right? Whereas if in the alternative, where I open the door to what might be, I'm open to the reality that I don't get to decide, right? Now, we'll talk about in a few minutes, like, the positive side of this, because clearly, like, God wants us to imagine and to dream and to hope and to try to manifest and to, create good that's outside of our frame of reality. But over here, we're talking specifically about when we disempower ourselves, we strip ourselves away from the power of imagination and curiosity, which we'll get to at the end of this process, which is the positive side of those things. And we really fixate on what our synthetic awareness tells us is good. And in doing so, we kind of become what's in the Torah called Elohim Acherim. We begin to worship other ideas of what's good instead of being open to what might be. So let's use an interesting frame. I think we've talked about this in the podcast before, but I once heard somebody recommend a really interesting exercise. Close your eyes for a moment and imagine how much money you would want to make, like in the lottery, or let's say in a business deal. Like, what would be your dream amount of money to make? And if you, whatever that money is, $1 million, $2 million, $1 billion, whatever that money is, whatever that dollar amount is, right? So just imagine that amount of money. And then he said this, and this is the kicker. This is a little bit of a harsh truth. That amount of money is how much it would cost for you to not have to trust God. That part of the fantasy that we have about making money is because I want to have enough money, I don't have to worry about making more money. So that there's a subtle in that dream and hope. Now, obviously, again, there's a positive side to this. People should dream for abundance. That's not what I'm saying. But in that desire is hidden a certain idolatrous intention of desiring for koichi v'yitzim yadi, right? Which is the language of the pasuk, or like the Navi describes by Paro, li yo'eri v'anichi asisani, v'ani asisani, asisini, right? That I have the Nile, so I'm a self-made man. We all want to be self-sufficient in the sense that we want to be in charge. And if we can create the veil of being in charge, we can ignore the vulnerability that it means to live life in a universe driven by divine forces and spiritual principles, right? So expectation and projection, if we kind of like frame it this way, I'm pro- presenting this, when I engage, when I fall into the process of expectations and projections, what I'm really doing is deciding what needs to happen so that I can wrest out of life the satisfaction and comfort that I insist on. And if you think about it, there's a lot of I in that equation. So part of what we're trying to, we need to like learn from this rule 62, don't take yourself too seriously, is that when I get stuck in taking myself, meaning my own ideas of what is and must be, what should happen and what I should feel, is that I strip away the opportunity to experience what is going to happen, and I disconnect my life from God. I disconnect my life from God's will and from what's going to occur and from the experience that's going to play out that might be that a what it appears to be a negative experience, or maybe an experience that's unpleasant, might manifest something that's far beyond anything I could ever have imagined. I think all of us can imagine, all of us listening, particularly obviously people in a recovery context or in a, from any form of recovery, mental health or addiction, but really all of us have had moments where something seemed like it was the worst for us and it turned out to be the best for us. And part of the opportunity we give ourselves when we live by spiritual principles is to realize that if I want to fully embrace what will be, I have to let go of the should, of what should be, and how I should feel, the expectations and projections that my mind creates, the rules, the hard and fast rules that I create for life. So what's the alternative? Meaning if I am disengaging from expectation and projection, what do I do with the unsurety that is in front of me? And really the opposite side of that coin, as we mentioned already, is imagination and curiosity, right? Imagination where we wonder what could be, and curiosity where we wonder what might be. And those two things, curiosity, and there are many people that talk about this principle of curiosity. For those of you familiar with like Jordan Peterson, he talks about this a lot. He mentions it a lot. It's something that definitely stuck with me from the time I spent, reading and listening to him. He talks about the power of kind of shifting my mindset towards a place of curiosity, but I don't want to just get stuck in curiosity because I also want to tap into imagination where I imagine something greater than what I have, right? Because part of this is not just to be in a determinist mindset where it's like, okay, whatever is going to be is going to be, and I have no opinion about anything, and I'm not trying to be more than I am. I'm not trying to manifest more than I am. I'm not trying to imagine a better life, which doesn't really leave room for the, you know, the ingenuitive mindset of creating more, right? There's two sides to this process. On the curiosity side, I'm okay with whatever is going to be, and I'm kind of like an active observer of my experience. And because I'm practicing curiosity, I'm open to what might be, right? I'm even like excited to see what happens, and I'm not imposing self at all, right? But if I follow that to its extreme, like then I'm not an active participant or observer. I'm just an empty audience, right? So the other side of that coin of curiosity, and this is the part that I think people miss sometimes, and therefore they get stuck falling back into projection and expectation, is imagination, which means actively imagining what might be in order to make things better, right? So that my life, my spiritual journey is not just a movie that I'm watching, but instead a movie that I'm participating in. And I might be the lead actor in the story, but I'm not the director and I didn't write the screenplay and I don't have the whole screenplay in front of me. So I show up every day and I'm given my role, and maybe in this like metaphor, right? It's an improv exercise, right? So I'm given my role, I'm given my the scene, I'm explained to me the story somewhat, and I don't understand the whole picture, but I got to show up and play my role the best that I can. That's the frame, but within that role, I need to imagine my character. I need to manifest that character. I can't just say the things the director tells me to say because the movie will never be beautiful. So part of this lens of, I think, what what don't take myself too seriously. And part of what we could tease out is, but I have to take myself somewhat seriously, right? Just not too much, right? Is that I need to engage that curiosity, but I also need to engage my imagination. Now, all of that requires the opposite of what we were talking about before, which is that the shoulds lead me to a place of a subtle form of idolatry. Engaging a life of curiosity and imagination requires faith. It requires faith in God. It requires faith in His will, that there's a plan. It requires faith in the process. It requires faith in those around me, that they will support me. And most of all, or maybe along with God and His will, I have to have faith in myself that I can handle it. Now, what happens is when I engage that faith or practice that faith through imagination and curiosity, I open the door to something greater than anything I could have imagined, right? A life beyond my wildest dreams, as they say, that is embedded deeply within me. And the way in which this is captured in the lens of Pnimiya Satora Chassidus is Chachma. The Sphera of Chachma, the highest of the Spheros, is a space in between the original intention and underlying desire and what was actually practically going to play out, which is, like in the Spheros, is between Keser and Bina. And in that space, the space of Chachma, which the Svarim HaKadoshim teach us alludes to Koach Ma, right? The power, of imagination, of what might be, or of asking a question, right? Which is imagining something outside the frame of the reality that I'm in. Now, Chachma is this capacity to extend myself beyond what I know. To imagine if there's a rock, I could then form that rock into a wheel, and then I could put two wheels onto a different rock or a flat bed of wood, and now I have a cart, right? Or I could, all of creation and all of reality, all of human innovation that has occurred over time that manifests into, I don't know, some knucklehead sitting in his house recording a podcast on his MacBook and then uploading it to the internet and then it being beamed into your phone because you happen to subscribe to his RSS feed, right? That's like, who could have imagined that? Humans imagine that. How did they imagine that? Because humans have this capacity to imagine a reality outside of their synthetic self, outside of what they are, imagining something new, right? And that is a koach that's there deep within us. So part of what we learn from this is that if I don't take myself too seriously, if I don't take what I know about myself, about life, about my journey, about God, about His will too seriously, then I open the door to something that's beyond my wildest dreams that could be just around the corner. And I don't want to get in the way of that. I don't want to get in the way of what might be. So it's really the curiosity and imagination working together that allows me to both sustain myself through the journey of unsurety moment to moment, imagine something new, be an active participant in the story of my life, and be open to whatever occurs, and therefore to see that oftentimes what occurs is beyond anything I could have imagined myself or I could have conceptualized. Because sometimes one of the powers of Chachma, I was talking to a group about this recently, some chavrusas of mine, we were talking about this recently, that the power of Chachma, you know, sometimes like when you're trying to explain something to someone else, imagine like if you were, when you were teaching somebody something, and like it comes, you knew it before, but then when you have to describe it to somebody else, it comes out and it comes out better than what you were aware of. And you're like, well, where did that come from? That must have come like from God, which is true, obviously. But part of what's happening is that you even know more than you can tell yourself. And when you're forced to constrain a powerful idea into words to somebody else, you reveal it to yourself. You reveal to yourself something that you knew that you hadn't previously been able to reveal to yourself. I mean, there's tremendous power laid deep down inside within us. And if we take ourselves, meaning what I want, what I expect, what I think I need to feel, what I think I should feel, the projection that I have. If I practice the opposite of Rule 62, then I strip myself of the opportunity to tap in to that power deep down inside of me, and also to the experience of what's going to have. So Rule 62 really means practicing curiosity and imagination, particularly when faced with uncertainty. And that means leaning into the uncertainty to be open to what might be. So the reflection that I want to encourage is everyone to take a few deep breaths when you have time, and to really think about stripping away the layers of expectation that come up whenever we are at a new moment, and stripping away the layers of projection, right? What I want to feel like when those moments come up, and really opening the door to imagine something more, something different. And then also let go and follow the experience with a sense of curiosity of what might be something greater and more miraculous than anything I could have ever imagined. And then, through practice of Rule 62, tapping into your own chachma, you open the door to a life beyond your wildest, wildest dreams. Really the story of Purim, right? Just to kind of pull it together, the Jewish people, right, the 70 years between the first temple and the second temple ostensibly had passed. And if you looked at the reality of where the Jewish people were at the beginning of the story, it was gone. It was hopeless. And that's why Chazal teaches that the party of Achashverosh was about the party that the Jewish people, that the Beis HaMikdash was not going to be rebuilt. They had made an attempt to rebuild it, and then it was stopped. And that's why Chazal explained that Achashverosh brought out the seat of Shlomo HaMelech, because he was exemplifying the fact that the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of the Jewish people that exists, the kingdom of Solomon and David, was no more. And the promise of God, the 70-year promise that God would exile the Jewish people for 70 years, was that God had given up, so to speak, on the Jewish people. And the Jewish people participated in the party, meaning they, in some degree, they bought into that idea. They had to capitulate and appease this foreign king. They had to serve this foreign power, right? Because their God had abandoned them. And in actuality, all of that process, that party itself, was the beginning of a string of events that, in which God was acting in a way that no one could have ever imagined, to bring about Esther Hamalka, Esther the queen, the descendant of Shaul himself, marrying Achashverosh, having a son who would then become king, who would then allow the Jewish people to rebuild the temple. And the 70-year calculation that Achashverosh had made was wrong. Haman himself built up wealth and power. That wealth and power ultimately went directly to Mordechai HaTzadik, who is the Moshe of his generation, right? You can imagine like the greatest power of evil that you can imagine in the world. I don't know, whoever you want to imagine today, Putin or, you know, Iran, whatever. Whatever. I won't get political, right? Even here in this country. And then suddenly all that power, right? Suddenly in an instant being turned over utterly and completely, Achashverosh turned over his signet ring to the Tzadik Hador, to the greatest Tzadik of the generation, saying, you handle it now. You're in charge now. The absolute utter turnover that occurred. And that's only possible, right? That's the story of the Megillah, that I can only be on the process if I have faith that everything is going to be the exact way it's supposed to be, which is essentially the faith of Esther and the faith most explicitly of Mordechai, who never lost faith in God's love for the Jewish people. He was both present with the reality of the suffering that was occurring and the sadness, in the sense that he sat in the king's court in sackcloth. But there was a deep faith that he had gathering the Jewish people together to pray and to fulfill mitzvos, not bowing down to Haman, right? Even though everyone else was urging him to, et cetera, taking all the steps that he needed to take in order to ultimately taking all the steps that reflected the curiosity and imagination of what might occur. And in fact, v'nahapachu, the exact opposite of what you would think would happen is what happened. Haman falls, Mordechai ascends, and the Jewish people have the fortune of a quasi-geula in the building of the Second Temple. And that's a metaphor for our lives. I think that plays itself out in many, many moments and areas of our lives. And Purim is the celebration of that hilarious reality, that beautiful, wonderful, joyous reality that you never know. As Rav Shlomo says, you never know.
Thank you for joining the Consciously family. Consciously is brought to you by The Light Revealed, a social media publisher bringing messages of Jewish spirituality and recovery to whoever is looking for them. Consciously is made possible by the kindness of the Capellius family in memory of Tzipora Bas Ravaram. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can give us a review and subscribe wherever else you get your podcasts. We love connecting with you, so please check out our website, thelightrevealed.org. Feel free to email us at thelightrevealed@tlrfamily.org. Our producer is Morty Schwartz. Our social media content team is Zoe Poznanski and Tehilo Nassanian. The assistant to the regional co-host is Shmaya Honickman, and our music is by Eitan Katz featuring Zusha. Thank you for joining, and we wish you the most blessed day in only revealed ways.